The Sunday Morning Linux Review, starring Mary Talmadge, Tony Venus, and Matt Anders as the Beaver.
And we are at episode 95.
F and R sync. Thank you. I almost said it again, causing Tony to get in bleep mode.
That's why I jumped right in there, because I saw your lips start to form that F, and I thought, oh, I better just jump in and say it. So
F-ing R sync.
And actually, the three of us are together. The Bemis family vacation ended.
And we'll start again next week.
Yeah. We'll start again next week. So SMLR will be going back on the road to Detroit. And
from Romulus to Detroit.
That's right. For 2 weeks, actually. Isn't that right? 2 weeks?
Yep.
So, but you will be joining us in the chat, won't you? Or will you be up then?
Next week, I may be in the chat. Mm-hmm. Because I think we're going to stop in Chicago, so I'll have internet access then. The week after that, I'll still be in the middle of Wisconsin, next to the Mississippi River, and I don't think there's internet access.
Wait a second. The Mississippi River
It's not in the middle of Wisconsin.
I lived in Minneapolis for quite a few years.
Okay.
I know this.
Actually, there's a state park in
Lacrosse?
No, it's along the Mississippi River, the last one before you get to Illinois.
Okay.
I don't know what it's named after some guy. I don't know what it is. Thomas something.
All right.
DeVore. I don't know.
All right. So it's a state.
You're going to the Dells?
No. South. The Dells is the north.
The Dells
north
are
end.
Kind of in the middle.
Yeah.
Oh, is it? I thought it was the very north end.
No.
Anyways, no.
The Dells are
south.
Great. Have you ever been to the Dells?
Wisconsin
no.
Dells?
Oh, they're fantastic.
Okay. It's about.
They're a great family vacation.
Your kids would like
yeah.
it.
They're a great
next
family
year.
Vacation.
Next year.
I think we're.
Maybe when your
Matt,
kids get
Matt
three
and I
hours.
Are going to plan your vacation next year. And it's going to start on Monday and end on Saturday.
His kids need to get just a little older.
Yeah.
And then they'll
really
dig the shit out of the Dells. Yeah.
Probably. Yeah. Well, we rotate every year.
There's water parks and the ducks. I loved the ducks.
Ducks?
That's what they call them.
I've never been there. I've driven by the exit really? Many times.
No, that's what they call them. They're those like World War II amphibian boats.
Oh, yeah.
Car things.
Yeah, I've seen
And then
them.
They go out into the river and up the river. And it's a nice thing.
Okay. That is cool.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, good. So anyway, you won't be here, I guess, is what we're trying to say.
Right.
To keep back on track.
If I can get to a coffee shop, there's a town about 5 minutes away, but it's so small I don't know if they even have public Wi-Fi or internet.
It's
you know,
the
coffee 2000s. Shop or
everybody's got public Wi-Fi.
Mm. Mm.
Rest areas in Michigan
here.
Have them.
No, I'm just joking.
Did you know that?
No, I did not know that.
Rest areas in Michigan have public Wi-Fi.
Okay.
Wow.
Well, I guess we could go out there and broadcast from there if we wanted to.
We'd go to that one on 275 they keep threatening to close down.
Oh, yeah.
Scared
Bring
to ask
weariness.
Why. All right, well, we're going to keep going.
Do you want to know why?
No, I don't want to know why.
I think Mary asked why.
I did not. Rhetorically, which means you do not expect or want an answer. Because the answer is already known.
Okay.
So we're...
I just say crowbar is necessary.
Okay, well, we're gonna keep our morning Linux review moving forward. So, Tony, thanks for sharing your whatever that was.
Well, it's my vacation for next week.
Okay, yeah, but, that's true.
Although, we did make a change for our live broadcasting. So in the past,
we're
we've always
be prepared
been
ahead of time. No, just kidding.
No,
we are,
for the
we
Google
are.
Hangout, we've always been broadcasting with a single mic, trying to pick us all up, and then Google Hangouts. Has auto leveling, so one of us will be loud and it'll pick it up fine. The other one will be quiet,
did
and
you
then
say
it'll
one
finally
of us will be loud.
Matt, no, but now I've got another USB audio device. It's a Behringer.
Yeah, it's got a cool little light on it. And
yeah,
looks impressive.
UCA 22 or 222, and
have you tested it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
Sounds
right.
pretty good.
Good.
It seems to be. I mean, how is the YouTube sounding to everybody else? So let
is
us know
a,
in the
is
chat.
Is there a lag? Is there a lag on the YouTube?
Yeah,
bit?
There's something between seconds? 10 and 30 seconds.
10 and 30 seconds?
Yeah.
All right, well, we'll be looking over the next, 30 seconds or so for a response.
Right.
All right, so...
yeah, well, and so, then one other thing I did. Oh. I know, it's been a busy 2 weeks for me.
Apparently.
RSS, yes.
Okay.
It. I figured it out. I'm using... There's an app in... Well, you know, a couple weeks ago, yeah. I asked about
using it had a
cloud RSS.
Okay.
Well, my...
I wasn't here for that.
I have an own cloud instance running on my own server here.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a little app that's an RSS reader. And it goes through and does that for me. It's cloud-based or internet-based, so I can get to it from anybody. It's pretty cool. There was a couple interesting articles sitting next to each other, so I'll talk about that during the news.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, I know which one you're talking. Yeah, yeah, I thought that was kind of interesting. Huh. So, all right, well, I guess I think we're going to save the best for last. Or should we say we're going to save the worst for last? Worst as in not Matt being worst, but his challenging story. So, or do you want to go first?
I'm going now, whatever that means.
Go ahead and share, Matt.
Oh, F and R sinks. I was doing an R-sync last night.
It was a cold, it was a dark, stormy night, yeah.
And Lou is not yet in the chat, but he might be listening, because sometimes he listens for a long time before he actually gets in the chat.
Maybe he doesn't want to be in the chat.
Maybe. But when he set this initial R-sync up, and when he did, he made all the partitions the same size instead of increasing var. So var was still the same size. So as I was doing the final rsync, and for the final rsync, you only sync user, var, and truth. Mm-hmm. So I sunk user.
You sunk.
Went fine.
Yeah.
And then I synced. And then I was syncing var. And I'm standing there on the crash cart watching it sync. And after a very little bit, it says, I can't sync any more files. It's out of room.
Oh, no.
I've seen that before.
So I had to return the server to its original condition with var 95% full and start this rsync all over. And then it's software RAID. And there's metadata on the freaking drive. So... I deleted the partitions, I DD'd the first megabyte, and then I rebuilt the partitions, and it kept seeing the freaking MDs and rebuilding the MDs by itself, and I didn't want it to do that.
Oh.
Oh, man, hours I'm fighting with this thing, and I had a server to rack. So finally, I just said...
Did you rack the server while all that was going on?
No, because I have to drive...
Because you have to
I have to go rack it.
Okay.
So finally I just said, F this. I am done screwing around with these gosh darn drives. I did not say gosh darn.
I think everyone knows that.
And so I just ran bad blocks on them.
Mm-hmm.
I started bad blocks in a screen, and I left to go rack the server.
Okay.
And I came back an hour and 15 minutes later, and bad blocks was through the right part of it. So I said, cool, and I stopped the bad blocks. I DD'd the first megabyte on the drives again, just for good measure.
Yeah.
And then it all worked.
Oh, good.
Ooh. What is bad blocks? Is that a script you guys have? Or
no,
that...
no. It's just it's a
command.
Do man bad blocks. So pop a terminal and do man bad blocks.
Oh. So it'll basically take a partition or drive or some device.
It and checks it. It checks it for bad blocks.
But isn't that also part of?
But
it's also
writes
part
to
of
it.
Like a file. You know, there's that one utility I think that will do a, it'll check that is it file system check or
FSCK.
Yeah.
But you never want to run FSCK. You can run on production drives and they'll be fine. You unmount and run FSCK, remount and go. Bad blocks. You don't want to do that because it destroys the data. It destroys everything.
Okay.
Does it? So it overwrites the entire drive.
Yes.
Yeah, there's, oh no. So, okay. Well, I'm glad to...
So you do this on unmounted partitions? Does it do it on partition or on drive?
You can do a partition, you can do a drive, you can do whatever you want. You say bad blocks and then tell it the device.
padlocks, padlocks. What you gonna do?
We probably should have saved that for
actually,
our tool.
Badlocks-Swift.
Yeah, stop talking, Matt. That's our tool.
Do we have a tool for this week?
No.
No, we
don't. This will be it.
Yeah. And we can go. We can do it right now. You do Badlocks-Swift, S-W-F-T. And I forget what all those switches do.
All right. But the man page probably describes it, right?
F is normally, so blocks will refuse to read or write on non-destructive test. SW.
Mm-hmm.
Or S is show the progress. And W is write mode.
Yep. And T?
And T is test pattern. So test pattern, specifically a test pattern to be written, or read and written, to disk blocks. Test pattern is either to be a numerical value of 0 and a ulong max 1 inclusive.
Hey, does it work on, Jess wants to know if it works on flash drives? Does it say, does anybody know that?
It'll find bad blocks, but you wouldn't want to run it because it's going to wear your flash drive
and
out.
Flash drives have auto leveling built in.
Right.
So whenever it finds a bad block, it just switches to a different.
Right.
Okay.
So with auto leveling, your drives probably are actually, what, a third more than what it actually reports to be? So if you have a 32 gig, it's probably like a 90 gig.
Well, it depends on your reserve
auto leveling. Right. How many's reserved?
We always set, when we make partitions at work, we always, because it does it by percentage, so then we go in with 2 and 2 FS and change it to just 256 blocks per partition.
Uh-huh. Cool.
Hmm. All right. Well, thanks, Matt. All right, what I did. Well, actually, I installed, I don't know if you've ever used what's, it's called Thatch. And that's photo batch. It's really, you know, P-F-A-T-C-H. Because I had a series of photos that I needed to resize so that I could load them up to a website. Because, you know, they're 1.5 megabytes each, and I'm not going to put that on a website. But anyway, so I installed it. And I made the common mistake that everybody seems to make, apparently. And I thought I had to open, I would open the photos. But what you do with Thatch is you create an action list. So if you want to scale them, and you've got the options of either the typical options of percent, pixel, you know, those kinds of parameters.
Yeah.
And it's just a whole list that you typically find. And once you create your action list, then you point it to the directory where these photos are. You identify the photos. And you run it. It was very slick. It took care of what I needed to have it do, and then I uploaded them to the website. So that's one little thing I worked on. So it's really a cool tool. It's in the Kubuntu repositories, which that I'm sure cool. means it's in the Ubuntu repositories because I think they're the same.
It sounds like it's a GUI front end for Photo Magic.
Image Magic,
yeah.
I was wondering that, and I was trying to find that to see if that's the case. I would not be at all surprised if that's the case, but it's a very nice front end for it. Even nicer than, I think, Image Magic's front end. So, but Image Magic, you know, just from doing it from the command line is just extremely powerful, as you and I have noted. The other thing I did is I got a call from my neighbor. She had gotten a new computer. So I thought, okay, another installment of I Hate Windows 8.
Yeah.
And yes, indeed it was. Well, it wasn't I Hate Windows 8. She's used to the typical panel at the bottom kind of thing. And, of course, I resisted the urge to say, well, let me take that whole thing off for you because that's really not what you wanted. But there is a utility that is available. I think it's – actually, you can download it from SourceForge. It's called Classic Shell. Now, I'm not going to talk too much about a Windows utility, but what's really nice about it for her is that you download and you run it, and it takes the Windows 8 interface, you know, that Metro or modern interface that Windows tends to boot into. What it does is it boots it into, you configure it. Once you install it, you configure it, and then when you reboot, it boots right into the classic panel at the bottom, the system tray to the right. It has a little shell instead of like a little Windows thing. It has a little shell. And so she was she's very happy about that.
Cool.
I mean, I did resist the urge because I said, oh, you know, we could have,
What is it called again?
It's called Classic Shell, and it's downloaded. You can download it from SourceForge. And for people who you know that you can't really take them off Windows, although you'd really want to, it's just a great way to put that Windows 7 look and feel back for them, so they feel a little more comfortable. Then you can start to talk to them about, hey, you know, I know of a operating system where you don't, you know, virus.
Right.
Yeah, the virus.
Well, if you make them comfortable with what they have, then they're not going to change.
Yeah, that's true. I should have left it. Anyway, so just a couple.
Or you could do like my mom, who just has two sons in the IT field, but chose us to buy a computer without consulting either of us.
And ends up buying a Linux computer.
Maybe that yes, and bought a Linux computer.
Oh, really?
She bought this computer called a Telekin. And she was
talked about that like about a year ago. But yeah, that's right. So it's a kind of a customized Linux distro. And she likes it?
Yeah.
Good.
That's cool.
It's touch screen.
I wish we lived in that area because that'd definitely be something that we could talk about. Or I'd work with them so I could, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'd promote them or
whatever. Telekin?
They're everywhere.
They're everywhere. Really?
Google it. They have a huge web presence too.
Hmm.
Oh, well, when I thought we looked at it before, I thought it was just in the in the East Coast.
Hmm.
Telekin.
Okay. All right. So. All right. Well, that's basically my stuff. We'll look up Telekin, and I guess we'll move on.
Cool.
Matt, what's happening with the Colonel?
Well, we had a release candidate on Sunday, the 28th of July, 2013, at 21:42 Pacific Daylight Time. Linus Torvalds released Kernel 3.11-RC3. And this is what he had to say about it. Another week, another RC. And please, just forget about me telling you people to get back to work last week. You got RC3 has about 50% more commits than RC2 did. Part of it is that a few people missed RC2, but part of it is that people just sent me more. Please stop. It's summer. It's nice outside. Take the kids to the pool or something. Send me just regression fixes. Otherwise, I'll have to start shouting at people again. Anyway, remember how I asked people to test the backlight changes in RC2 because things like that have really bad track records? Yep, that all got reverted. It fixed things for some people but regressed for others, and we don't do that. One step forward, two steps back thing. But never fear, we have top people looking into it. The CRC T10 diff crypto support got reverted too, since there were INITRD infrastructure problems with it. But the bulk here is some block driver updates, DRBD, RSXX, Zen, Bcash, Lovata, and the DRM changes, mostly QXL.
Lovata?
But LibATA.
Uh-huh. Oh, okay.
LibATA.
Speaking like lobotomy.
LibATA.
Okay. Okay, gotcha.
Mostly QXL, but there's changes to the big tree too. Radeon, Intel, Nuvo, and various random other drivers. USB SCSI, pin control, etc. There's also the usual Arch updates, many Alpha, ARM, and PowerPC. Full shirt log since RC2 appended. It's big enough that I debated doing just a merge window style merge log overview, but hey, maybe people enjoy this kind of detail. So mainline is 3.11-RC3. On stable updates, Fred Cohartman released kernel 3.0.89 with 27, on Sunday, the 4th of August, at 17:24. 17:24? What? You're saying it's only 9 o'clock in the morning. How can it be 17:24 on Sunday the 4th? Well, because he's in Taipei.
Oh, okay. Oh, you know, I wasn't that quick.
Fred Cohart released kernel 3.0.89 with 27 files changed, 255 lines inserted, and 190 lines deleted. On Sunday, the 4th of August, 2013, at 17:38 TST, Greg Cohart released kernel 3.4.56 with 47 files changed, 387 lines inserted, and 235 lines deleted. And on Sunday, the 4th of August, 2013, at 17:38 TST, Greg Cohartman released kernel 3.10.5 with 111 files changed, 1,120 lines inserted, and 697 lines deleted. And then on Friday, the 2nd of August, 2013, at 2350 EET, Ben Hutchings released kernel 3.2.50 with 78 files changed, 535 lines inserted, and 285 lines deleted. And our kernel developer quote of the week comes from Greg Crow Hartman. Driver's staging has less reported issues than driver's net wireless. The fun things you can do with statistics. Hint, there are other problems with driver staging than just Coverity found things.
Thank you, Matt.
Okay, all you kernel followers out there chuckled.
All right.
Okay.
Well, thank you, Matt.
You're welcome.
Tony, what's going on with the Linux distributions this week?
All right. So on the 28th, I believe you guys left off with Sparky, right?
Yes, we did.
Yes.
So...
we did.
First up is Puppy.
Is Puppy, yeah. Puppy 5.7 Precise. It's a minimalist distro featuring the JWM window manager and compatible with Ubuntu 12.04. For some reason, I thought we already had a Puppy Precise.
Is this just
a version update?
Yeah.
I guess it must be, because there was already a Puppy Precise.
Well, yeah, there is a Puppy Precise. This is just 5.7.
Okay.
But JWM is Jim's window manager. When I first saw JWM, because I like to stay at Marriott's when I travel. It's JW Marriott, and I think that monogram, I don't know if that is like one of their chains or something. When I saw that, it just kind of caught my eye. But,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's just a kind of a straightforward window manager that they use. All right.
Cool. And then next up on the 31st, we have Wi-Fi Slacks 4.6, which is, let me turn myself up a little bit. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
sorry, it's a Slackware-based CD with a collection of security and forensics tools. I want to say there was a recent release of that, too.
Well, you know, they've got a touch... It's kind of interesting. I'm trying to figure out why someone would, they've got a touch version of it, too, so that if you've got a tablet, you can run this on your tablet.
Mm.
And I watched a video of it, and it was kind of funny because there's the on-screen keyboard, and you could see there was a cursor that was moving around tapping, and, of course, each key would light up. And I was thinking, well, I hope you don't type any passwords in while you're doing that because it may show the dots in the box, but it's going to show the keys that you chose.
All right. Going on, we have Superb Mini Server 2.0.5. The SMS server is a Slackware-based distro designed for servers and featuring Webmin, web-based administrative utility, and a bunch of other things updated. It says it has KDE, but why would you want to run a X on a server? I mean, especially if you have Webmin. I use Webmin on my servers. I love it.
Well, you know, it's funny you asked that because that very question was asked on their forums, and it was commented, or at least the response was that there are some good tools there. For example, the text editor Kate is a very, or Kate, and also Knote.
What's wrong with Vi?
Well, nothing's wrong with Vi.
All right, move on.
No, so what was their response? Was those, there are some pretty powerful GUI tools?
I'm afraid to say, because Matt will say, what's wrong with that?
GUI tools do not belong on a server. Bottom line, period, end of discussion.
I think what belongs on a server is whatever's going to help you administer that server efficiently. And
non-graphically, yes.
Well, but for you, Matt, sure. But for someone else who prefers some tools that might provide some... You know,
it's just too much overhead. You're sucking all your resources up to run X. Why would you do that?
Well, if you only have 256 megs on your server, yeah, maybe. But if you're running a server that's got 16 gigs of RAM,
and the SMS server, it's pretty much built as like a small business server, you know.
So you're not going to have somebody that's...
You're not going to have a professional IT.
Yeah, like you, Matt.
You know, 24/7 team.
We have to write this down, Tony, because you know he's going to say something. He's going to talk about some GUI server tool, and we're going to remind him of this. Just kidding, Matt. So anyway, all right, we're going to move on.
All right, moving on is Parted Magic, 2013.08 or _08_01.
I'm sorry, what version was that? No, just kidding.
Really?
Yeah.
And Party Magic is a live CD featuring disk management tools and data rescue. Jeez.
That's
and,
all right.
You know, in the past, I've
Say
been
that
using...
three times real fast.
Yeah.
I think once was enough.
I was using separately. I was using G-Parted live CD mm-hmm. and...
Parted Magic?
No, PQ, or the disk cloning utility.
Clonezilla.
Mm-hmm. I'd been using those separate.
Right.
And then I also had this downloaded, but I never booted it or used it. Mm-hmm. And this has all that built in. With one boot, you can switch between them. And
really?
Yeah.
It's I didn't very know cool. that. I used to use Clonezilla and then a G-Parted disk.
So I am officially changing over to Parted Magic.
Oh. I think I'll have to download and check it out. You guys got me all, yeah, and all excited about this.
It has, I think it uses XFCE or LXDE, one of the lightweight managers.
Oh, Matt, and is that going to be all right, though?
Well, it's a tool, so it's not fine a server. Being yeah, it's not a server.
It's five.
It's not a oh. server.
Okay, anyway, well, but it has a lot of stuff
built
in.
Aren't you working on a server?
You might.
All right.
And you know what else I used? It has
I work on servers G-Smart. All the time from my desktop, and that's graphical.
Okay.
It has G-Smart control, so you can go through and run smart tests on it and stuff to make sure the hard drive's testing okay. So I was using that this week, too.
Oh, it's, that smart info or that smart drive
Yeah,
stuff?
G-Smart yeah. control. Okay. Yeah. It's very cool. So I would definitely suggest it if you're... if you want something on the fly.
What is G Smart Control? Is it a graphical implementation of the SmartMont tools? Or
Yes, oh. exactly.
Oh, wait a second. Did you say graphical? Matt's not interested. Matt, just forget that.
All right, continuing on.
That's why they make SmartMont tools.
We have OS04 Open Linux 13.6, which is a Ubuntu-based distro with XFCE as a desktop. And I've seen it released a few times, and they actually used to have a different name, didn't they?
No, they didn't have a different name. They had a different... I think the last time they released, we talked about the fact they had a different logo.
Oh,
that
that's right.
From that box to the, you know, whatever.
To a cube, or yeah, so this a
is,
circle.
This is no doubt probably the bug fix release, I think, right?
Yep, .3, .6, yep.
Okay.
All right, and the last on our list is actually a BSD release, FreeNAS 9.1.0.
Yes.
Which is an open-source, BSD-based NAS solution for network storage and a multitude of hardware platforms. And their big thing that they can use with this is ZFS. And mm-hmm. it's really built for more for professional, like enterprise-level NAS solutions. So, yeah, it's very, very cool.
Although, I do have a news story. And an old timer in the NAS appliance market is back.
Oh, really?
You'll be hearing we'll
about it. Find out
about
it shortly.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I think that FreeNAS. I think they also, but they also put it out for newer users.
Doesn't AX Systems put that out?
No. Well, they might. I mean, they might carry it.
I'm pretty sure AX Systems owns FreeNAS.
Oh, hmm. I think you might be right. I hate to admit. I think I heard a story or we saw something we talked
yeah,
about.
Yeah, because they bought PSD, PSBSD, PC, they bought PC,
yeah.
PCBSD, mm-hmm. and I think they also bought FreeNAS.
Okay.
Hmm. IX Systems. I like IX Systems. They build servers, but they really support uh-huh. the BSD open source
They
community.
Do, and I think that's wonderful, and I know they'll get
it. Oh, look, it says it right here. FreeNAS 9.10 IX Systems sets a new level of excellence. Maybe we should have actually read it.
Oh, they're going to probably be at Ohio Linux Fest. And
IX Systems? Yeah. They weren't there last year,
were they? Well, PCBSD will be there.
Yeah.
And somebody from IX Systems will be there. Chris Moore works for them. He's the maintainer of PCBSD.
Speaking of talking BSD, there's a development release for FreeBSD 9.2.
I know.
Yeah.
So you know, as soon as that comes out, PCBSD will come out with it, and then I think something's going to happen to this laptop.
Oh.
I wanted, you know, that Walla.
It's KDE-centric, so.
I know. And that Walla, I'm liking that particular...
Slackware is KDE-centric, too, Mary.
Yeah. Good. All right. but anyway, yeah, well, Slackware, it's a wonderful distro.
The distro of the week, according to DistroWatch, calculated by website hits per day.
We have OS04 with 1201.
And trending up.
And number four spot, we have Ubuntu with 1451.
And trending down.
And the number three spot is Puppy with 1534.
And trending up.
Number two, we have Debian with 1628.
And trending up. And it's not even a they didn't even have a release. They're just number
they're just
two
good.
And trending
they're just
up.
Good. Yeah,
Debian
right.
is cool.
They're solid.
And in the number one spot, we have Mint.
Gotta love that minty goodness.
Man, you are falling down on your job over there.
With 2681.
And yeah. trending down.
And coming in at 18, we have Ubuntu.
Did you know what I found? I found out last night? In CentOS.
I'm scared to ask.
In CentOS, you can cat a directory.
The directory listing or everything? Why couldn't you do it before?
You can't do it in Debian-based distros. Try it.
Cat the directory listing? Do
you can't if
LS
you give, if
what's
you
the
do
command?
No. Just cat and then give it a directory. You can't. It won't do anything. It'll give you an error in Debian.
Huh?
But in CentOS, it gives you the directory listing.
Wow! So it just sounds
yeah,
like
because it. You're right.
I know.
But if you do LS.
I know.
You can cat to
but
a
why would you do
file?
That? That's just retarded.
Well, easy. So, there's probably a script. There's probably a script in CentOS that's just exactly that. So
I don't know. I was watching one of the sysadmins last night. I was talking to him while he was working on this cluster. We're troubleshooting. We were having problems with a cluster. Some of our clusters, the NFS mounts on them keep going down, and we narrowed it down to a problem with NFS and either NFS or RPC, and it falls down. The traffic gets so high, and then bam, it just falls down.
Does it cat to a file when you do cat directory name, or does it just display?
No,
it on
just
the,
shows it.
So why wouldn't you use LS?
I don't because he was. I don't know. I don't
it's,
know. He was
it's
doing
less
it.
Letters to type.
He was doing it. I don't know.
All right.
But anyway, because he was using it as part of a one liner command.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Anyway, the he narrowed it down to either, and these wait times with these kernel threads, and they were unkillable because they were kernel threads. But that's because it was using TCP instead of UDP. He switched it over to UDP, which, if you read the man page, it says, don't use TCP. So he switched it over to UDP, and it solved the problem.
Cool. Yeah, because UDP's faster, because it doesn't have the checking built in.
Because we were relying on the TCP layer to do the error correction. Yeah. So with using UDP, you don't get the error correction at the communications layer. So you have to rely on the application to do the error checking.
Is this another tool?
No. You have to rely on the application to do the error checking, so it's a lot harder on the resources.
Oh.
Well, thanks. Thanks, Matt.
Yep. I don't even know what brought that up. I don't remember now.
Yeah. Oh, it, we started
cat.
With
oh,
a
we
cat.
Started with catting a file directory. Yeah, that was it.
Okay.
All right.
What distro are you reviewing this week, Mary?
I have a review this week.
All right.
A distro review.
All right.
This week's review covers a Linux distribution that just cracked DistroWatch's front page in its most recent release in June. Born from the bosom of Mother Russia and weighing in at 946 megabytes, this Linux distribution is configured to look retro, back to the heady days of GNOME, when all was right with the world. I want to make a point of saying the name of this distro because that's its name, Point Linux. So, will retro be cool like a Siberian spring? Or will I take a look at this distro and find it to be as tasty as a bowl of beet soup? Let's find out. See all the Russian references in there?
Borscht is good. I like borscht. Have you ever had borscht?
No.
It's good.
I don't like beets, so I can't imagine. They taste like dirt to me. You ever tasted beets?
Beets are delicious. I love beets.
Anyway.
You would not survive in Australia. They eat beets on everything in Australia.
Well, maybe pickled. I don't know. But anyway, I'll keep you in mind. So the name of the distro, of course, is Point Lenox. The maintainer is Peter Rysenkov. The distro's latest birthday was June 9, 2013, when it made its inaugural appearance on DistroWatch's front page. It's a derivative of Debian Wheezy. And the kernel is 3.2.0-37. And the review desktop is Mate 1.4, although I think Mate's current release is 1.6. All right, live environment. Point Linux, as I just mentioned, uses Mate, a GNOME 2 fork, which is customized to resemble GNOME 2, surprisingly, albeit with a crisper set of graphics than I remember GNOME 2 to be. And that's probably because I'm, using a higher quality graphic adapter. The system tray in the upper right corner contains the typical icons, network, sound, battery, update time, and shutdown, which actually opens to a separate window to reveal several system options, including hibernate and suspend. Graphics, as I said, look great because the Nuvo driver was loaded, and then my wireless was IWL 4965. Now, Point Linux uses the following defaults. The browser is just Firefox, so there's just one browser loaded. The office suite is LibreOffice. The mail client is Thunderbird, and the file manager is Kaja or Kaja. Probably Kaja. I don't know if it's pronounced
K-A-J? This way.
C-A-J-A, which is Nautilus-based, but I don't know if in Spanish, usually the J is silent.
Right.
So that sounds like an H, I mean. So anyway, but that's what's
Aren't
there.
Are they Russian?
Right, but we're talking mate, which, again, mate is the South American drink, so I'm thinking that concept of the Spanish pronunciation carried over to the various tools inside of it. So I wasn't really sure, but I wanted to mention that.
I would agree with you, Mary.
Thank you. The default wallpaper has a spacey Northern Lights look to it, and I have to say that the entire desktop reminded me of Triskel Linux as far as looks go, minus Triskel's ethereal boot-up music, which is very nice and spacey, but again, very clean and simple. Now, the install process. It was a normal graphical install prep process with the standard questions. After answering those questions, a summary with all the collected responses appeared. It all looked okay. But at the bottom, check by default, was an option to send an anonymous installation report. I decided not to send. After all, it's probably on the NSA computers already anyway. I also decided not to install Grub, but to update my existing Grub install, because as you guys remember from the various times before when it's not been noticeable, I have overwritten my Grub, regular Grub install with what I was reviewing, so I've gotten a little wiser in my old age now, and I keep an eye out for that. So, and that's what I did. I just simply updated and then rebooted back into Point Linux. So the installation itself then was problem-free and easy. Onto the installed environment. Now, Point Linux rebooted to the same clean, straightforward desktop I saw in the live environment. I easily connected to my network, changed my mouse buttons, and was ready to further explore this distro. Naturally, Point Linux uses a Debian Update Manager, which, if you've used it in the past, or if you use it now, provides useful information regarding the dependencies for each file that's listed. There were 62 updates awaiting for me, which consumed 122 megabytes. I was asked whether I wanted to perform a safe upgrade where no packages were installed or removed, just updated. I said no. I thought that meant that I would then have no restrictions. I could update and install and remove. Apparently not, though. I scanned the list and noted that there was an updated kernel. And so then I decided to go ahead and start the update. But after a while, I noticed that the update manager seemed to be stuck downloading at 0 megabits per second. A hung process. Mm-hmm. A ping test showed no latency on my end, and I could not. And then I could not stop the update manager the normal way, so I had to kill it via the command line. Any attempt to use it again during that session resulted in a fatal error, so I ended up rebooting, but still could not download the updates because I wanted to go with that. I didn't want the safe update. The assumption on my part was that if you didn't select safe, you were then going to go kind of off-road and rogue, whatever. And I thought, well, I just want to go ahead and see what that's like. Well, there must be some setting someplace in this distro, because what happened is that I was only able to download and install the updates when I selected the safe. So, anyway, but I also was able to use Synaptic and ultimately cleaned up that fatal error situation with I think it's DK package configure -a to clean up the problem I had with the update manager. So I successfully applied the updates and moved on to the rest of my review of the system. Of course, during the course of my review, I happened to click on help and noted that they did not appear to be installed. So the help files were missing. I checked several different applications that were within Point Linux. No help files. I'm sure I could have gone into the package manager and downloaded and installed them. Point Linux's menu is compact with all the basics a regular user would need. The previously noted LibreOffice included Writer, Calc, Draw, Impress, and Base. And Point Linux also includes, by default, VLC. A few other programs that I found to be probably useful if you had a scanner, Simple Scan, easy to use a scanning program. I've used it myself on Kubuntu, and it works very nicely. It's a kind of a quick hit. Scan the document you got and save it. In Grandpa, which is the Mate Archive Manager, I really appreciated the clean interface, and setting up a tar.gz archive was no problem at all. Point Linux also includes the chat client, torrent client, and Remina for remote desktop.
Remina.
I think we've gone through that before. But yeah, Remina for remote desktop connections. Because it's based on Debian, of course, you have literally thousands of programs at your disposal. So the fact that the menus are relatively simple and don't contain a lot of things is really not a downside at all, because you've got access to Debian's thousands of programs and the other repositories. So my rating. Point Linux is a solid no-frills distro. Although the install is a little on the frugal side, the power of Debian, and when I say the install, I really mean the packages, the programs available, the power of Debian gives it a boost exactly where it needs it. I give Point Linux 3.5 cups of hot Russian borscht. Whoops, I mean coffee.
Borscht is
good. I know you told me that.
Cold.
Well, that's what I said. Oops, I mean coffee. Oh. I saved myself. So anyway, but yeah, it's kind of a quick review of Point Linux, but it was just very solid, in my opinion. Nice looking. Not a distro I would use myself, but that's just only personal preference. Anybody who likes the retro gnome would probably enjoy it.
Cool.
Okay.
It's time for the tech news of the week.
First up, we have Nuvo puts out a call for NVIDIA data dumps. So if you're just a regular user, this is a way for you to help out. Back when the Nuvo project was just starting out, they needed loads of MMIO trace dumps in order to reverse engineer the NVIDIA binary blob. They tend to not need so many these days. But for some of the GPUs, they still need some dumps. So what they're looking for are dumps of the GeForce 8.
They're looking for people to take dumps and send them to them?
Yes.
Okay. just want to make sure I understood what was going on there.
And they need dumps of the GeForce 8 series mobile GPUs, the GeForce 9 series mobile GPUs, NVIDIA Ion, and Enforce IGP. What they are looking for is a better understanding of the NVAC clock tree. If you need some help in understanding how to acquire these dumps, the Nuvo Wiki has some documentation you should look at.
Okay. Thank you, Matt.
And next up, a power capping framework proposed for Linux. Increasing numbers of hardware devices are supporting power monitoring and limiting, so there is now a need for a standardized interface. The framework being proposed for addition into the kernel would try to provide a unified interface for user space on top of SysFS. This would allow users to make changes to these settings for different hardware inside the system, and to create a unified driver API for the implementation of these features. And last up, OpenFiler project switching to CentOS. OpenFiler is a distribution targeted at creating a NAS system. The current OpenFiler uses the Connery package management system created by RPath. When the transition is complete, they will be using the Yum package management system developed development on OpenFiler was stalled for an extremely long time. So long, in fact, some considered it dead. However, a few good people have gotten together to revive the distribution. They released OpenFiler 2.99 in April of 2013. And then the next release will probably be 3.0 and based on CentOS 6.4. And that's all I have.
All right.
Mm. Okay.
I found a couple of articles this week. I go at the end, but...
That's fine. Let's go do something different this week.
You go ahead. All right. So I was talking a little earlier about my RSS reader that I'm using now. It's part of OwnCloud, and there's apps that you can install. So it's nice because it goes through, the server goes, does the updates, and you just log in, and it's all there.
Mm-hmm.
And
your own server.
My own server, yep. I run it on my own,
gotcha.
My own server, and it works really good. I really like it. These two, I have like a couple security web pages, you know, RSSs that I follow, and a couple Linux and a couple OS. I think I end up with like 6 different ones that I follow, or maybe 11. Yeah, it's 11.
6, or maybe 11.
Anyway. Right. And then these two laid right next to each other. They're from different sources. And it's just interesting how one of them says, Facebook enables security browsing for all users. Secure browsing. Mm-hmm. So they enable the HTTPS.
Yep, and I saw
that. Where before, you had a choice whether you wanted to do HTTP or HTTPS. And they said it's because all their testing has been that HTTPS is no slower than regular. So they're like, everybody's secure. And then the one right next to it is gone in 30 seconds, where a new attack pukes... or plucks the secrets from HTTPS.
So just by coincidence,
those
showed up next to each other in your RSS feed.
Yeah, so it was very funny.
That is funny.
And there's an exploit with the HTTPS where it just like the other ones, there's a couple other ones, which is, where'd they go? One's called Crime, another's Beast, Lucky 13, and Lucky SSL 13. Strip. Those are all other HTTPS exploits.
Uh-huh.
But this one, you can go through, and this one's called Breach. And it will go through and pull like email addresses, passwords, things like that, right out of your SSL connection.
Wow.
And so it was just interesting how they're both next to each other.
Uh-huh.
So just make sure you have your firewall, you're trusting where you're going. That way you're not going to be caught by these exploits.
These bad guys.
That's right.
All right.
And then the last thing I have is the Ubuntu forums are back up and the postmortem. So Canonical went through and posted exactly what happened with their... forums. Oh. And they said it had nothing to do with the operating system. The operating system was not compromised.
That's what they claim.
Well, what did they say? What do they say?
They say it was their forums software. It's vBulletin.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
vBulletin.
And vBulletin's really insecure, so maybe I tend to believe that, but I'll never admit it publicly.
So they say what happened at 1658 UTC on July 14th, 2013, the attacker was able to log in with a moderator account owned by a member of the Ubuntu community. This moderator account...
This rogue moderator that...
had permissions to post announcements to the forum. And the announcements in vBulletin, the form software was maybe allowed to contain unfiltered HTML, and do that by default.
Mm-hmm.
The attacker posted that message. It had an exploit in it. And then private messaged a couple of the admins. Says, hey, can you go look at this?
And then the link had the exploit.
That message had the exploit in it. 31 seconds after the administrator saw it, then the attacker logged in with that administrator's account.
Yep. Oh, wow.
And then from there, you know, blah, blah, blah. So before the administrator even had time to respond to that private message, the attacker had the admin rights.
Wow.
So they went through and fixed that. But they said the attacker had or could access the vBulletin environment as administrator with shell access as www-data. And then all form app servers. It had access to, or meaning they could read and write to any table in the form database. So they used that to download the user table, which contained email addresses, salted hashes, which is hashed by MD5 passwords, for 1.82 million users.
Oof. Wow.
Yeah. So that is where they say they didn't have access to the operating system just as a user. And that's what I like about Linux, is that if this one user was compromised, the www data, that means that they can just do what the web server can do. They can't do what a full administrator can do. And so that's why I like Linux in general, you know, that users and applications are split up like that. But it goes on. Links.
Yeah, it's. I always try to check them out. What are you doing over there, Matt? You're smiling and grinning.
Oh, I have
a second chat window open
with someone. Yes.
All right.
Who just sent me a frowny face? I should be the one with the frowny face, not him.
Oh. Okay. All right. yeah, we understand.
So I posted the link to the article in the forum. Or in our IRC. And it continues on for what other things that they could do, and I don't feel like reading the entire thing out loud to the entire on our show. But
I read about it pretty well.
Yeah, and I read about a third of the article.
But I read the whole thing. What are you talking about? Third of the article. I did. I read the
I read it out loud.
I went
through about a third of the article. Maybe about half, but. But anyway, so it's that was interesting that they went through and specified everything that they did, and it was neat.
Okay.
But that's all I have.
Okay, I have a couple. One I thought was just really humorous, and that was, Matt, you and I kind of talked briefly about it, very briefly, and that was Microsoft asked Google to take down Microsoft.com.
It was hilarious.
Yes.
That is funny.
And I think corporations, the article starts off by just saying corporations are too busy these days to sniff out copyright infringement. So many rely on automated systems to generate DMCA takedown requests. And, of course, Microsoft is no exception. And they use LeakID, which, according to the article, resulted in a delightful faux pas because it tried to censor itself. Now, Microsoft, apparently this list goes to Google, who then takes it down. I suspect that Bing probably already took it down. But Google is not on autopilot, and sadly, according to the article, did not zap the URLs. So Microsoft was not forced to learn a hard lesson about outsourcing. So I thought that was kind of a funny funny article, and I'll paste a link to it in the put a link to it in the show notes. The other one I saw, and I just saw this last night, didn't really get a chance to prep it up, but there was an attempt by a hacking group, a Chinese hacking group. What they did is they hacked into what they thought was a power plant, but it was a honeypot. And so they've got, it was a decoy that was set up to kind of ensnare these guys. So they were able to trace it back to some Chinese army hacking group.
Wow.
Yeah, so that was actually in Slashdot, and I thought that was kind of interesting. And those are my news stories. I've got a couple of KDE Corner items this week, which I'll quickly share with you. The first one is no more unknown icons in Dolphin. So apparently the next release is going to... If you ever open Dolphin, you may notice that sometimes it takes a little bit for the icons to paint. I've noticed it myself, and I thought maybe it was just my system or something.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, so they are going to take care of that, apparently. and I've got a link to the article that talks about it. Frank Rendenhouse, who now is the maintainer of Dolphin, posted a blog posting about that. The other thing I want to mention is that the Plasma Media Center 1.1, their beta release occurred this past week. They've got some nice updates to it, including that the YouTube's option to search for and watch videos from YouTube is going to be included. They've got, you know, some nice things that are in there. I'll have a link to that. And let's see here, Krita 2.7 was just released. And hey, is that our new?
That's our Morse code alarm.
Yeah. Does that work?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So anyway, but. And then there'll be a link in the show notes to the donation page for kubuntu.org, which is now accepting donations, which I think is nice. I mean, certainly I've used Kubuntu for probably 5 years, and I've derived a lot of benefit from it.
So. How are they doing on their Kickstarter?
I don't know. I haven't looked.
Canonical? You're talking about the Ubuntu Edge?
I think they had to throw in an extra little incentive. Because, you know, they had that initial push, and then it was falling off, so they threw something else in there, I think, in the hopes of boosting it. So
it's expensive.
It's very, well, I thought they were asking for quite a bit of money, and yes, it is expensive. I agree with you, Matt.
Hey, they got to figure out how to turn a profit somehow.
Yeah, something like that. So anyway, but those are the news items I've got.
All right.
Okay. Well, all right.
All right. Well, thank you, Mary, for the news.
Now it's time for Mary's quiz show. Is it alive?
All right. During this segment of the show, I challenge Matt and Tony to identify whether a Linux distro is alive or dead. Every other week, I twist the concept and challenge them to decide if the named entity is a Linux distro or something else. This week is Twist Week, and I challenge Matt and Tony to decide whether the Linux distro's logo is animal, vegetable, or mineral.
Oh.
Extra credit.
Ooh, I gotta fire up Google.
You get your hands off. Yeah. Extra credit will be given if, after they identify it, if they also know if it's alive or dead. Kind of like what we typically do for Twists. You guys ready?
All right.
All right, the first one is Springdale Linux. Animal, is its logo or mascot? Animal, vegetable, or mineral?
Springdale Linux.
Mm-hmm.
Mineral.
Animal? And
and alive.
Dead.
All right, now I'm giving you credit. In other words, one's not tied to the other. So if you can get one.
We've always done it.
Okay, we'll do it. Okay, all right, we'll be at the same. All right. All right. Springdale Linux is from Princeton University, and it's got Tux in there, so it's animal.
Oh.
So, and it's alive. So you, Matt, you're leading by one point. That's right.
Wait a minute. Oh.
You said mineral.
Because you said, yeah. You said mineral and dead, alive.
And I said alive.
That's right. Yeah. Okay, next one is Kuki Linux. Kuki Linux.
Kuki Linux. Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say animal and dead.
I'll say animal and dead also.
Kuki Linux mineral and dead. Kuki Linux was a lightweight Ubuntu-based distro built as a replacement for Linpus Lite on the Acer Aspire 1 netbook. And its logo was a cookie with a bite out of it. So, and again, I call it mineral simply because it's not breathing.
Right, an inanimate object.
Yeah.
Oh, exactly. I get it. Wait, what are the three again?
Animal, vegetable, or mineral.
Okay.
All right. Next.
Well, wouldn't that be closer to vegetable?
No,
because vegetables don't breathe.
No.
Yes, they do.
Yes, they do.
They breathe in carbon dioxide. Yeah.
All right.
Well, while they're on the vine. All right. Next one is web.
Even after they're picked.
They could for
they
a little while.
They still respirate, yeah.
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
Because you can ripen tomatoes in a bag. Or kill somebody with oranges in a bag.
That's why you put them in a bag. Yeah. People think, it's because of the dark. They ripen in the dark. No, it's not. It's because of the increased CO2 content.
Ether or something, yeah. So, anyway. All right, we're moving on. Because you got to go. All right. Web converger. Animal, vegetable, mineral.
Mineral.
Vegetable and alive.
Alive.
Because it's a sunflower.
It is.
What did you say? Mineral, didn't you?
I did.
All right. And you're right. It's a sunflower, so it's vegetable or plant. And it is alive. It's a fully graphical minimalist live CD, which I think is run, you kind of run it on like a kiosk. So, Tony, you had mineral, you had vegetable. Okay, we're moving on. Katamar Linux.
And I said alive. I got two for that.
Oh, yeah, you did. Thanks, Matt. Sorry about that. My eyes water in here, so I can't see. All right, Katamar Linux.
Mineral and dead.
Yeah, sure. Mineral and dead.
It's animal and it's alive. Katamar Linux is a complete Linux desktop. I believe it's got like a little Tux type animal.
Katamar, I don't remember hearing about that before.
Yeah, I've used it on previous Is It Alive? KDE is it's. I think it may have also changed its. I don't know if it changed its name, but it's. It was in DistroWatch, so I pulled it from there.
All right.
Next one is Deepwater Linux. Animal, vegetable, mineral.
Animal and dead.
I think it's mineral and alive.
It is mineral. It's got like some this logo. It's not alive.
Like a wave.
Yeah.
And
it's dead. So, Matt, did you say it was alive or dead?
Yeah, I said alive.
Though. Okay.
I've been saying mineral the whole time, and then the well, not the whole time, but
yeah, Deepwater Linux was a fully graphical minimalist. Mineralist, just kidding, live CD distribution based on the GNU general public license. So, again, mineral and dead. All right, we come to our last one. Paldo Linux.
Paldo?
Paul, I have no idea. I'm just going to go with whatever Tony says because I have no idea.
Then I'm going to go with vegetable and alive.
Ditto.
What's that?
Vegetable and alive.
And what are you saying, Matt?
Ditto.
Okay. Paldo Linux is animal and it's alive. What'd you say, mineral?
I said vegetable.
Oh, vegetable. All right. Well, we know who
won. I think you actually got zero, Tony.
I think so.
And so Matt wins this week's episode. So join us next, well, not next week. Join us in 3 weeks for another edition of Is It Alive?
Congratulations, Matt.
Matt, congratulations. I think we're moving on now to...
It's listener feedback time.
And we have a listener feedback line, and that number is 313-626-9140. Okay, what do we got?
Got Joel McLaughlin.
Yeah? Yes, we do.
Who chimed in and said, oh my God, what the hell is happening? No, there it goes. Okay. That's not what he said. That's what I said because my browser decided to freak out on me there.
He says, I'm the toast.
Yes, he
I
says,
provide the foundation.
You are the toast of SMLR. You provide the foundation.
Oh, who, Tony?
Yeah.
Well, he is the toast.
He was...
Y-E-W.
He's being a little insensitive and making a little bit of fun of our... Trucker Rich, who we love and adore.
Yeah.
So shame on you, Joel McLaughlin.
But I think the characterization of Tony as the toast was spot on, because when you don't have toast, that jelly and butter just go all over the place.
Yes, they do. It's just not good. It's not going to be good the next 2 weeks. So if you guys just don't want to listen for the next 2 weeks, we'll understand.
No, we're gonna be fine. We may not have... Well, I think we did get the... Didn't we get the YouTube going last week?
I don't know what we did.
Yeah, YouTube was going.
All right, we'll be fine. Matt and I know what to do now. And we'll really know what to do a week from next Sunday, because it'll be the second time in a row. All right. And what else did we get? I think we got we had something else there, didn't we?
Yep, Frank emailed. I think it was referring to Matt. It's a Slack
Frank.
Word. Yep.
I don't have a Frank.
Frank W. Bell.
I don't have it.
He says Slackware boots to run level 3.
Yeah, by default.
By default. So
I did not.
If you don't want to run GDM,
that.
You just end it then at tab.
Yeah.
I did not see that either.
I remember seeing that a few days ago.
It was actually a comment on our website.
But they normally come to me via email.
Yeah. Well, they came to the show.
I didn't get it.
All right. Well, All right, Matt. Well, anyway, so we now know.
Well, yeah.
I think we kind of knew that before.
The next one I have is from Kevin Anthony.
Yep.
Uh-huh.
Who says, hi, Matt. You just did a core. You just did an core install. You might have installed a window manager. In the past, Slackware's default was to boot to console, and then you would have to use StartX. Now, if you do a full install, you boot to the window manager. And then he says, Mary, I keep hearing that you dread having to install Slackware. At one time, I would agree. It was unpleasant install to do, but possible. Now, not that hard. It is not any different than doing an Ubuntu or a Debian install. What is hard is Fedora. I have tried to install Fedora 18 and 19 to no avail. I cannot get past the damn partitioner.
Oh.
I have installed and run Slackware, Arch, Debian, and Ubuntu without many problems. Really enjoy the show, but please get Tony back to improve the audio quality. And then he says, JK.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we didn't do too bad last week, considering, but we tried hard.
Right.
I think there was also, we also got something from... Oh, let's see here. You know, when I open these, it just opens with all of the header information, so I have to go running through here trying to find who it is. It's from Henson, and it had to do with Razer QT. I don't know if you guys saw that or not.
Yep.
Razer QT, because he said he didn't think it was going to be around much longer, and it looks like he said that it looked like they were going to be combining efforts with LXDE, which I think could, will only be a good thing.
And I was looking for LXDE QT. Mm-hmm. It's not in the Fedora repositories.
Well, you're going to be changing on anyway, aren't you?
LXDE period is not in the Slackware repositories.
Mm-hmm. Do you notice how he didn't answer that question, Tony? So, huh. But anyway, yeah, so we did. I went out to the blog site that Henson had mentioned, and yes, there was an entry there just talking about the fact that there's going to be some combining of LXDE QT and Razer QT. So in my opinion, it will probably be a positive thing simply because they'll take the best of both and will make a strong, lightweight desktop, so... That's my take on it. Let's see. What else did we have? Listener feedback. Anything else?
I think that was it.
Okay. All right.
Dowdle in the... I have one more. Oh. There's one more. But Dowdle has a response to Kevin Anthony. He says, some have issues with the Fedora installer. I have no idea why. I've done hundreds... Not an exaggeration, of Fedora 18 and 19 installs.
On the same computer?
In a variety of scenarios, and haven't had any problems. And I agree, Fedora installed like a dream for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know with, was 18, they had a problem with their partitioner. It didn't show things right.
They didn't have
a
problem with the partitioner. It was just totally different, and... people had a problem with the partitioner.
Okay, I get it. It's not the partitioner's fault. It's the person trying to use it.
Correct, because it was a little bit their fault because it was a total change. It was different.
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't get a lot of explanation that it was going to be a different type of thing going into it. But we had one more from Henson Sturgill. And he says, I love to, but I don't think it's going to be around too much longer. Oh, that's the LXDE QT one.
Yeah. Because they're working on combining.
Never mind.
That's okay. That's quite all right. Okay. Well, I think that's covered our listener feedback, and now it's...
Featured Music of the Week.
I'm going to play one of the Nine Inch Nails.
Oh, my God.
But we got to... Yeah, go ahead and...
I will never drink another one of those beers, ever.
I think that would be great. That way I'll keep them all to myself.
You may certainly have them. Oh, my God.
Okay.
Well, that was, I think...
I've never seen anybody complain about a free beer.
Well, you are now.
I complained about the $8 Miller I got at Comerica Park, because that's
outrageous.
Like,
and it's warm and flat?
It wasn't warm. It was cold and bubbly, but it was $8 for a mass-produced beer.
I want a random number between 1 and 31.
Oh, I don't know. 26. I don't know if you randomly.
There,
had to do
I just
that
randomly play said that. 26.
26? Yeah. Okay, so we're going to listen to track 26 of
I the hope it's Nine a good Inch one. Nails. Alright, so I guess that's the end of our show today.
That is the end of our show today.
Alright, so you've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. This was episode 95.
95. FNR Sync.
That's right. I'm in there now. Should I put that?
FNR Sync.
This is Tony Bemis,
Matt Enders,
and Mary Tomich
saying have a good week. See you next week.